Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the world-famous Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as seven other audio and video platforms, including YouTube and iTunes, where all our recorded pod and video casts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure, including, of course, our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And if that's too hard to remember, try davethecaregiver.com. That'll work also. Hey, our goal out here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. I mean, it sounds nasty, doesn't it? Because it is nasty. We have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, founder of The Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
Today, we will be interviewing Nancy Weckworth. Nancy has been a caregiver for her life partner, John, since he had a massive stroke, just like my wife. Way back in 1991, my wife's was in 96. So we have a lot in common. She's also an author, just like me. her book is Don't Stop the Music, Finding the Joy in Caregiving. Gosh, Adrian, is there joy in caregiving? Is that a possibility?
I think so.
Of course there is. But most of them don't know this concept of joy in caregiving. But we're going to find out because Nancy's going to share all the lessons she learned by being a caregiver to her loved one in their 26-year journey. And that's a long time to be a caregiver. But I guess there's people out there who've been caregivers longer. I don't know. So stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. One thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial souls, but they have this tiny little problem. You see, they're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Sound familiar? Well, we can learn something from the airlines. Yes, even United, because they tell us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. And why do they tell us that? It sounds like the most selfish thing a parent could do to their kid, right? I mean, can you imagine the plane going down, everyone's screaming, and your bundle of joy gasping for breath, and you have to decide, well, whose mask should I put on first? Well, you know, I don't even think I would make the right decision, but we have to, because the airlines know so well that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved one, you will most likely black out, and then you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. Like that guy they took off the plane. He couldn't do anything.
Especially if he was attached to his gas mask. Air mask.
Right. You know, they broke his nose and they bloodied his face and knocked out a couple of teeth. Now, you don't want that to happen. So put your mask on first. caregivers are exactly the same way. You know, you see the analogy, right? Well, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, we go through a grief process. And it could take days, it could take weeks, it could take months, or it could take years to get through it. Everyone is different. But I don't know, I don't want to sign up for that years one. I want to get through grief as quickly as possible. So unfortunately, there are no shortcuts. There's only one way out of the grief process. You got to go through it. So hopefully, you know, if you have a healthy mind and a healthy attitude and a positive support group around you, you can minimize the time that it takes to go through that grief. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And thank you so much, Adrian, for being on the show last week. It was just you and me talking about boundaries because our doctor guest had some patients she had to take care of. And I'm actually so excited to tell you that the long overdue third book that I've been talking about for 2 years will be everywhere June 1st, hopefully. It's My Life Too, When to Say Yes and When to Say No to Thrive in Long-Term Caregiving. I think that's a good title. What do you think? All right, enough of that. Nancy, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I really appreciate it. Why don't you just take a minute or two and introduce yourself, unmute yourself, and tell us, who is Nancy Weckworth?
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me today. As Dave said, I'm Nancy Weckworth. I've been a caregiver now for 26 years, in addition to being an author of Don't Stop the Music, Finding the Joy in Caregiving. Prior to John's stroke in 1991, both John and I were professional musicians here in Los Angeles. John was a trumpet player and I was a French horn player. We are both composers. We've had our own music publishing company for 30-some years. We published all the music that we wrote. And so when I was thinking of titles for the book, I decided on Don't Stop the Music, because we learned to find joy in our new lives, and we didn't stop the music. We just changed the type of music that makes us happy.
I get it. The new normal.
The new normal.
Wow. So that's a great title to the book. And he had a stroke. What kind of a stroke was it? Was it a bleed or was it a blood clot?
He had a platelet embolism that developed in his carotid artery due to a disease called fibromuscular dysplasia. Say that three times fast. What happened is this platelet embolism broke off and went to his brain with no warning. We had no idea he had this disease at all. And it's a congenital disease, and his artery was congenitally defective, which we did not know. Quite a process when they finally figured out what had caused this stroke, because he had no reason, no high blood pressure, no symptoms of anything else. Just one day, boom.
Wow.
Wow. It was like my wife, although she didn't have any of those, symptoms or history, they checked for high blood pressure. They checked for high cholesterol. They checked for, damaged heart valves from a previous heart attack. She didn't have any of that. I mean, we were very, very healthy. Later on, they just figured that it must have been just a random clot that came out of her heart that stopped up in her carotid artery. And later on, even further, in those days, in the 90s, only birth control pills, they said, caused blood clots. They didn't say anything about estrogen or progesterone, which she was on. Now they say, oh, yeah, we think those cause clots, too. So it was probably her hormone therapy. Is another reason to be on natural hormone therapy, don't you agree?
Totally.
Okay, well, tell us about the journey you've been on with your friend and partner, John, and how that journey inspired your book.
Well, like I said, it happened in 1991, and at the time he was at a rehearsal for a recording session. They were about to record a new jazz album, and I got the phone call while I was at work in a retail store, and then the whole world changed. He had the car, so I borrowed a car from a friend and started driving to a hospital. Wow. And when we got there, he was just laying on the bed speaking normally to me. Everything seemed normal. And then he had another stroke, and that's the one that took his entire right side and all of his speech. So his stroke was massive. Yeah. Big
so
shock.
Sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all remember when we got that phone call, in my case, it wasn't a phone call. I just got up from bed because it was a Sunday morning. We were going to go to church and she was gone. And I went looking for her, found her in the next room watching TV, because she had a sign that she didn't, none of us really recognized. She had the headache of her life. And it's like the third day. Now, this was the fourth day, the morning of the headache of her life. She wanted to call Dr. Kevorkian to come in and just put her out of her misery, And it was a Labor Day weekend, so it's not like, it was convenient to go to the hospital, it was a holiday, and she was going to eventually go and check it out. But that fourth day, I guess, you know, that blood clot was just giving her the headache. So you should never ignore headaches, especially if you're not used to getting migraines. I know Adrian gets a lot of migraines, but
chronic.
But if you don't get migraines and all of a sudden you've got this huge headache, you know, you should probably not wait, because we're not the type of people who just run off to the doctor for every little ache and pain. We like to, because, you know, they'll just say, well, take two aspirin and call me in the morning, you know, whatever. So you and John were musicians before a stroke.
And that's correct.
You openly talk about trying to continue on as a performer after a stroke. That's interesting. But the offers to perform, I guess, dwindle down. They don't want this new normal, huh? How was that like for you guys, adjusting to the new normal?
Well, the switch to the new normal, I call the paradigm shift. And that one was a tough one to learn. It didn't happen overnight. A lot of people have asked me, they said, did you just figure out right away that this was going to be different like this? And I said, no, I wanted to continue my life on the path that it was, because we had both worked hard to be musicians. And we were building a career here in Los Angeles, which, as you know, the two best cities in this country are New York and Los Angeles to be in the music business.
Don't forget Nashville.
Well,
different.
Yeah.
Nashville isn't even country anymore. It's like everything.
So I've heard.
I have a cousin who lives there, and he bought me a shirt that says Nashville is the new LA. And it's true. We went to a restaurant, and like 60% of the people there. Oh, I was from LA. Yeah, I was from San Francisco. I was from San Diego.
Yeah, and well, when they start calling LA the new Nashville, that's when you know you got it.
Okay.
That would be interesting.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. That's okay.
We go on these tangents and we chase these rabbits down holes. So you got to get used to that. So what exactly, maybe you said this, maybe I wasn't listening, but what is John's and your gift in the music? I mean, your singing instrument?
John is a trumpet player, and he was an extremely unusual trumpet player in that he was skilled in both classical and jazz music, and both of us worked in the studios, and both of us were composers. And we met in the symphony orchestra, actually, in Florida. He was the principal trumpet player, and I was the principal horn player. So we ended up sitting next to each other in the orchestra. And I tell a really cute story in the book at one point in time. We used to play for the Palm Beach Opera. And the Palm Beach Opera was in a very unusual venue. It was basically the circus tent. And they would build up a stage in the center of the floor. So it was an arena style with the stage down below. And so to do the opera every year, they would put curtains up that went to the ceiling, which was an amazingly high ceiling. And then they would section off about two thirds of the arena for the backstage and about one third of it for the seats. Then they would build the stage, and in front of the stage was essentially a pit orchestra, but we were actually sitting on the main floor with all of the audience. Mm-hmm. And so as you know, with any of these situations like this, there's always a group of people who have season tickets, and they always sit in the same seats year after year after year. And John and I were sitting next. John sat behind me, and we were sitting in the row next to the aisle of these people. And one day, I don't remember which opera we were playing, but this woman reaches across the aisle and she pokes me on my leg, which made me jump almost to the top of the ceiling. She said to me, "Excuse me, but did you ever marry that man behind you?"
That was my next question, by the way.
they had been watching our romance grow for years.
That's so sweet.
So did you ever marry that man behind you?
We did get married. Yeah.
Oh, good. I love a happy ending to a story. So can he still compose?
He writes music and practices his trumpet every day without. Wow.
Now, with my wife, everything coming in was fine. She can read, she can understand, but everything going out got tweaked because it was on the left side of the brain, right side of the body. And so her writing, you know, she can't remember how to spell words, and she can't remember how to form the so her speech is very affected with aphasia and apraxia. What are his symptoms?
John is extremely aphasic. He has his right side. He can walk. He walks slowly with a cane. His right arm is completely paralyzed and now frozen in the locked position up near his heart. But he walks through the house with a cane.
And no orthotic device on his foot?
Not in the house. We just bought a new one, as a matter of fact, for outdoors by Sabo, S-A-E-B-O, or if you're not familiar with them, I recommend that you get familiar because they're the best thing ever. But he gets around. When we're out of doors in public, we use a wheelchair because his balance is extremely compromised. And if someone pokes him with a finger, he'll just fall right over because he cannot self-correct or adjust.
So how much can he speak? Can he speak in a sentence?
Oh, yeah, he speaks in sentences. John is what's called, many people, doctors have called him a miracle. And we were in a drug study for a while for a drug to prevent strokes or multiple strokes after your first stroke. And the doctor there was a rather famous research doctor, Dr. Engel, and he met us and he said, he started asking John some questions and he said to John, how can you speak? How do you speak at all? And he looked at me and he said, this man has Broca's aphasia. How did you get him to speak? And in 1991, we were told he would never speak more than 150 words, but he has a vocabulary now. His speech is limited and he's easily challenged by pressure. If he won't answer the phone. Yeah, because the minute he gets pressured, then everything locks
up. Frustration.
Yeah. But he speaks, and it's way more than 150 words. I heard a new word the other day that I hadn't heard him say in 26 years. So
what was that word?
Little by little. You know, I don't remember.
But it was
I have
new.
Caregiver's brain, guys.
So what exactly did he do? Or nobody knows how he started talking when he shouldn't have.
Well, Dr. Engel asked us, he said, what did you do to get him to speak? He said, you need to document this because nobody knows how to get these people.
And my wife would like some of that.
Yeah. Well, we worked really hard and I have an entire chapter in the book actually on that explains a lot of the things that we did. But basically, we worked nonstop 24/7 for 2.5, almost 3 years. And John and I were both teachers prior to this stroke. And being teachers and musicians, we knew the value of learning and of practice. And so I basically started out, in addition to the therapy that he was getting to the hospital and outpatient, I started out teaching him things like you would teach a child if you were teaching a child to speak, developing certain skills. I used to take him out of the skilled nursing facility where he was and walk him down the street for a walk, and I would hand him a set of Crayola markers that were different colors, and I would point at a flower and I'd say, what color was this? And make him match the marker to the color, because I was teaching him color and recognition and being able to pick up something and show me what I had asked, teaching him how to answer a question. So I created tons and tons of little exercises and games that we played all the time.
They're
and
in a lot your of book? Things,
they're in my book, yeah.
I got to get this book. I wish you were her caregiver when she had her stroke. You were the perfect caregiver, hands-on teacher. I was like clueless. I mean, you know, she had her speech therapy and stuff, but she tried really hard for a couple of years. But then after a while, you know, she just kind of gave up, because it's like going to Las Vegas and putting putting $100 down on the crap table. And if you win, you get a penny. So the payback was not worth it to her. You know, she won't even wear an orthotic device anymore because walking was so difficult. She's just in a power chair now. It's like, you know, she's just cruising along and just, you know, wanting life to be as high quality as possible with very little struggle. Although she did give it, you know, the good old college try for 2 or 3 years. But then she, you know, the progress that she made was just so minimal. She just said, you know, it's not worth it.
Yeah, everybody has to deal with it in their own way. We each have our own path on this journey, and we can't tell anyone else how to live their path. And that's, I knew John's personality before all this happened, and I knew that I would have a limited time that he would actually cooperate with me, because he's a trumpet player, he's a brass player. He's used to being noisy and loud and in control. And so when he got completely out of control, he worked with me really hard for the first couple of years. But then there came a point where he just finally, he sat down one day and he looked at me and he said, "Wake up tomorrow, all fine." And he just decided to quit. To quit getting better. But he's made remarkable progress. He inspires me every day because he's a remarkable person. He stuck to it because he wanted to speak. We did a lot of reading. I took him to the library when I went to work and let him read. And he read Life magazine from the beginning to the end. And he started out reading the large print books until his eyesight got better. And then he went to smaller print books, normal print again. But he reads incessantly. And he has told me that his brain at first was very foggy, but now better. That's the type of sentence structure that he has.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Misses a word, a verb here and there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow, very interesting. Listen, we're going to take a break, so don't go away. We will be right back and talk some more.
Okay.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Nancy Weckworth and Arlene Gruberg, and that is Charlene's story. she also encourages me every single day. She's amazing because I come home and, you know, the food's on the table, the laundry's done, the dishes are cleaned, the house is picked up, and I look around to find where she hid all the little elves that helped her, but can never find any. Anyway, they're special, aren't they?
They certainly are. I enjoyed watching that little story about your book and your life and your story with Charlene. It's actually very similar to what we went through. Okay. She has a lot more functionality than John does.
Really? In what way?
Well, John cannot help with anything.
Really?
Yeah. He writes music and plays trumpet, but that's all he can do. He used to help with the laundry and do his own laundry, but he doesn't do that anymore either.
What causes him to not be able to do that? Is it just his will, or he's physically unable to, or what?
Well, John is now 78. Oh. So age is starting to creep up on him, and he's becoming less and less mobile. And he's not willing to do any exercise at all anymore. Yeah. And so people make their choices.
Yeah.
And I can't make him be any different than who he is. He is who he is.
That's and right.
He's content with his life. My whole goal with everything, especially at the beginning, was to give him quality of life, because I knew if he had quality of life, it would be easier for me.
Yeah, you know, and it's true. You know, they each decide, my wife did and your husband did, what is easy for them and how they can go another 10 or 20 years in this new normal. And my wife chose not to walk. She chose the power chair, but she can do a heck of a lot in that chair. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, she's 73. She looks pretty good for her age.
She does.
She's in better shape than me, actually. But I'm doing better. I had a bicycle accident that threw me into the air, you know, like 3 years ago, and broke my ankle, and then my disc herniated, and so I'm just coming out of that after a 3-year journey. So it's good to feel young again. And those people who say, "Well, at least you have your health," they're right. At least you have your health. You can't buy your health.
I'm very grateful that I'm very healthy too. I do quite a bit of gym work every week. Both at the yoga gym and at a regular gym. So
the caregiver has to be healthy. And you sound like a healthy caregiver, you know, up in your mind as well. Like, tell us about your experience with burnout. Did it ever happen? And what did you learn? And how did you fix it? And all that stuff.
Burnout is an ongoing issue. And it comes and goes with me. I'm grateful that I've done enough personal growth work that I'm aware of when things are happening to me and when things aren't right with me. And so then I will take a vacation. And the value of respite is amazing.
With John or away from John?
I've done both. But when I get really burned out, then I have to get away from him for a while. And it was only on this last trip a year ago, April, to Peru, to Machu Picchu. That was the first time that I've ever had to actually hire someone to be in the home with him, because he couldn't get his own meals together anymore. So we're just moving into the arena of having to hire help here if I'm not at home.
Now, did he let you go, or did he make you feel guilty about going? What, was he happy about it? He didn't care? What?
He's delighted to be away from me, because then I don't badger him.
Oh, maybe I should try that strategy with my wife. go. Interesting.
No, he loves it when I get away and do things. He would like to travel more with me, but I can't do it anymore. We made a
Cruises is probably the easiest thing to do. But
yeah, we could do that, except for I get really seasick. But and they can fix that now too. But we used to travel quite a bit. I took him.
Does he have a power chair or manual?
No, John was never one that was really good at driving real vehicles. And so getting him in a power chair is not a wise idea for a lot of reasons. Now, his spatial judgment is poor. He can't, we're in a store, he runs into people, he backs into people. It's just, there's things that are gone with his brain that make that an impossibility.
Was the stroke on his left side of the brain or the right side of the brain?
Left side of the brain, just like your wife's. His right side is impaired.
Yeah, no two strokes are alike. Must have been in a different. Usually when it's on the other side, you've got the balance and the spatial problems. It sounded like it might have been kind of close to the other side.
His was massive. His was massive. And we're lucky that he's even with us.
Wow. Well, you know, my wife has said many times she'd rather be paralyzed from the neck down than not be able to talk. So believe it or not, she would envy him because he can communicate a little better than she can. It's like playing charades with her. But she, you know, she's got the nonverbal part down really good. I've seen her talk to a guy in the restaurant while we're waiting for our table for 20 minutes. And they're just having a conversation, laughing, slapping each other on the back. And this guy doesn't know that she can't talk, you know, because she's got the nonverbal. Oh, yeah. You know, she's touching his face and she's, you know, touching his leg and you know, saying, you know, you can go pretty far with yes and no and ah and oh and ooh and e, you know. And so he was probably just flattered that this good looking woman was giving him all his attention. You know?
I have to share with you that John's verbal ability in the music world is still almost normal.
Oh, wow.
When we go to the opera, he will tell me the entire story of the opera.
Really? Without leaving verbs out?
Well, he leaves out some verbs, but he knows the characters and he knows the world of music, and that's where he's the most comfortable. So it's easier for him to speak to people when he's speaking about music, because that's the world that he lives in.
And how about his compositions? I mean, are they good now?
He's written about 500 of the same piece.
500 versions of the same piece?
Yeah. He doesn't really quite know this. But I'm still amazed that he can assemble notes that work. The compositions actually work, but they're not.
Well, that's jazz, variation of a tune, you know.
Yeah, but they're not nearly the skill. John was a very, very skilled composer. He has hundreds of published compositions. He used to be a staff writer for Columbia Pictures. Mm-hmm. And so he's reasonably well known, or was, in the music world, and had an amazing career. He was one of the top 10 trumpet players in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So that's his world. That's where he lives. And wow. That's what he's good at. And so he still writes. It doesn't matter whether he writes great compositions anymore. They're great to him and it makes him happy. So he has joy in every day because he can do what he loves.
So getting back to your book, you talk about no rules or promises or guarantees in life. Share a little about that.
Well, you know, I think about this often. I was just thinking about it a couple of days ago. I was watching some television show and people are teaching their children to dream and to have hope and to build something for themselves. And then when something like this happens, all your hopes and your dreams disappear overnight. And there is a huge mourning and grieving process that one goes through with this procedure. But if you don't make the paradigm shift and shift to the new normal, you lose, because there is no going back. And to try to live in the past does not serve you. So it became my goal to find new goals and to find new things. And in reality, the finest thing that has ever occurred for me is writing the book, because I now realize that everything that happened to us all along the way, all the jobs that I had to do to support us, all the skills that I learned, were all skills that came together. It was meant to be. This is now my purpose in life, is to get out and share what I have learned with others.
Yeah.
I did so many things. I worked in recording studios. So doing things like what we're doing today is normal for me. But now I'm not doing music. I'm sharing how to be joyful as a caregiver.
Yeah, we all are. And
exactly.
We've taken on a new life.
Exactly. I admire what you've done. This show is Amazing. Well, no, the show's amazing. I listened to a bunch of your episodes. I
didn't really?
Yeah, I did.
She's a fan, Adrian. I love to meet a fan. Thank you. You know, you just never know who's out there. You just every week you just talk into the microphone and you hope you're doing some good, but you never really know.
Exactly. Know,
for certain, but we hope. As
yes.
long as the microphone's on, I will all be talking, even Adrian. Adrian's doing a great job.
I've been pretty quiet during this show. The two of you have so much in common. I just wanted to know from Nancy if, I mean, I know that you got away by yourself, but when you need help, are you finding that you need help more and more around the house? And are you letting yourself be taken care of a little bit?
You know, I'm really bad at that. The first time I've ever had any help was for that trip when I was gone. I've mm-hmm. not had any help for the entire 26 years. And we're about to sell the place where we're living in Burbank and move out to another city. And I told John, I said, in this house, I'm having a housekeeper. Finally, because I want to do other things. I want to go out and I want to rebuild my Japanese garden. You know, that you cannot do it all. And the second book is looming in front of me. It's outlined. It's ready to go. I just have to sit down and do it. But there's so many things. I'm so involved with speaking to stroke support groups and helping develop this new website that we're working on. So that's a big, huge project that's ongoing.
How do you set up your speaking engagements to the stroke support groups? Do you visit first? Do you call first? I mean, that's something I want to do, but I haven't really gotten I haven't done it yet.
You know, it's so strange because every one of them has found me and they come really? To me and ask, yes. But now I'm involved in this incredible network of people, and so the opportunities are coming more often. I just flew out to Texas a few weeks ago and did a whole caregiver party the night before Valentine's Day. This was a really interesting support group. It's in Laredo, Texas. And they, for Valentine's Day every year, it's very hard on all of the people because they miss their loved one. Yeah. And when everybody's sitting around talking about love and joy and buying gifts for your loved one on Valentine's Day, and their loved one is essentially different. And so it's very easy for them and all of us to get depressed at this time. And so what they did in this stroke support group for the evening before Valentine's Day, they separated the male stroke survivors from the female stroke survivors from the caregivers. And they brought in counselors for each of the groups.
Really?
And I was the counselor for the caregivers. And I gave them five things that they could do to make caregiving easier for them. We did a little workshop. And then I handed them crayons, well, colored pencils, and coloring book pages, and we had a respite party, and the That's caregivers great. Had a party, and it was great. They just grabbed for those pencils. They were there to have fun, and they started talking and chatting, and it was amazing to watch. They just had their own little party, and they felt so much better. It was just great to watch. Yeah, so this is what I'm encouraging a lot of these stroke support groups to do, is separate the caregivers from the survivors and bring someone in for the caregivers and let them talk to the caregivers.
Definitely.
And that's a whole new revolution that's coming in place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I must have been lucky because the one we first went to had done that. The caregivers
really?
Go in one room and the survivors go in the other room, and then they talk about each other, you know.
Yeah, well, that's
totally different
they
issues.
Need that. Yeah, yeah, they need that.
Yeah, I thought it was very valuable.
Yeah.
And that was back in 96, 97. So maybe a lot of people just haven't caught on to it yet.
Yeah. I think you were fortunate to find one that did it, because most of the people go, huh?
Yeah. And the good thing is that it was for younger people, because, you know, most people who have a stroke are in their 80s and 90s. And it's like, we just couldn't relate. You know, I was 42. She was 52. Mm-hmm. And so this was a group, especially for young people. And, you know, I mean, there were young mothers there who had brainstem strokes, who were paralyzed, and young kids at home. And it was really sad to see. I think they said 15% of strokes happened to people who were relatively young, under 30 mm-hmm. years old.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I read an article about that 2 days ago and put it up on my Twitter account about the number of people who are younger who are having strokes is rapidly increasing, and there's some concern about that.
Do they know why?
No, they don't. But they were just noting that the fact that it's happening, and so I'm sure that people are going to start watching this phenomenon, because there's a lot of kids out there. And there are actually caregiver groups. I heard about one in Florida for kids who are in high school who are caring for their parents.
Sure.
Wow.
That's something that we actually address on the caregiver spaces, young caregivers. Yep.
That's fabulous.
How plentiful is that, Adrian?
It's a growing population. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. It's one of our more rapidly growing groups. It's an important segment.
Because if you're in high school, you know, let's say you have 3 kids, you start when you're 25. And so maybe that's, and then in high school, you're like 18. So these parents are probably in their 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
This could happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or younger. Yeah.
Or younger. So
strokes are happening to younger people, and more younger people are becoming caregivers.
Well, like I always say, there's 3 kinds of people in the world: caregivers, those who are going to become caregivers, and those who are going to need caregivers. And exactly. On that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening. Anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening. To a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this? To depression, which is a very serious thing, because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation, and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
We're back with Nancy Weckworth and Adrian Gruberg. We're talking about Nancy's new book. Is it a new book? How long has it been out?
Not a year.
Yeah, that's still new. So, you got any questions for Nancy, Adrian?
Well, I asked her if she wanted help, needed help. Mm. Nope. A lot of people take on more than they, you know, the average person can handle. And you seem to be one of those people. You've got with all this, you still compose and play and write and.
I know if all the caregivers were as healthy as her, we'd be out of a job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I just wanted to know, how were you always like this, or was there a learning curve for you? I mean, when it first happened, you know, when you first realized that you were going to be a caregiver for a very long time, I mean, did you go through the grief process? Was there some anger? Was there depression, the bargaining, you know, all that stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I went through all the stages of the process, and I still go through them now and then. It's not a finite thing where you say that is gone. It crops up every now and then. I went through a lot of anger, especially at the beginning. I just remember pushing John in a wheelchair along a sidewalk about a year after the stroke and being just enraged because I knew that I was going to be pushing a wheelchair, and that was not part of my plan. It's the shift from one lifestyle to another that was incredibly difficult for me. And the loss, for both of us, the loss of our careers as professional musicians was the biggest thing that we had to set aside and say, this isn't with us anymore. And there are times of the year, holidays are particularly tough for us because that was when we always worked the most. And in Christmas especially, we would be working fools, and we were playing all this incredibly gorgeous music in these cathedrals and just helping everybody celebrate Christmas, and it was so wonderful. And that's the biggest thing that we miss. We, every year when the season comes around, we take out our favorite CD and we sit down and listen and hold hands on the couch and cry because we just miss playing so much. But
well, you can share that, though. I mean, that's important, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we do get to share that. And it's okay. You know, we're grateful that we got to play as long as we did and at the level that we did in the music business. There's a lot of people who never got as much career as we did. So
you sounded very accomplished.
Thank you.
So what do you do with your new music?
What do I do with my new music is I go out to stroke support groups and I make a lot of podcasts. This is my third one today.
Really?
Talking to people and trying to spread the word that there is joy in caregiving and to help people learn better ways to be caregivers. My next book is actually on the spiritual growth of a caregiver. And we're going to, I'm going to move into this aspect of not how to be a better caregiver and change sheets and make meals, but how to change your mind and how you think and how you heal yourself and others. And the next book is going to be about.
That's a great topic. Why don't you tell us about your faith and how this developed or strengthened your faith? Why does a caregiver need to be in that spiritual place?
Because we get to do something for the entire time as a caregiver that most people do not ever get to experience. And I'm grateful that I've gotten to experience this. And this is the concept of living constantly in unconditional love, where nothing is being given back to you. And once you can realize that we were chosen to be caregivers, this is a gift to us because it is so special and so it's demanding, but once you realize that the demand is something that you can embrace and live with and find joy within the fact, knowing that you can do this and knowing that you're so incredibly special, I feel lucky that I got to experience this. I'm not happy that the stroke happened, but it brought me to a new level of learning about unconditional love.
Yeah. And I, Adrian and I both agree with you that it is very special. But what about these people that those words are just so foreign? They can't even imagine feeling that way. Is there hope for them that one day they might?
Well, you know, I want to believe that there is. And this is my mission, is to help find these people and to help get them there. But the reality of life for all of us is that we are each on our own path. We are each given a set of things to learn in this life, and we can choose to learn them or we can choose to not learn them. And if we don't learn the lesson, that lesson keeps coming back. And so for these people, I want them to understand if I can reach them, and if others like you can reach them, we can make a difference in their lives. And that helps not only their lives, but it helps us too.
Sure.
We know that we're valuable. I already know that they're valuable as a caregiver. Reaching them, it's when they are ready to learn, when they are ready to receive that gift will come for them. It's there for them. But we cannot learn anything until we're ready to accept the fact that,
The big problem is so many of them are just so burned out, so fried to a crisp, so need to get away and can't, feel hopeless, feel trapped, feel like they're in prison, that, you know, they're not going to learn anything until we can at least put them in a better environment, you know, mentally, physically, financially, spiritually, you know, all of it.
All of it. And it's a huge, huge endeavor. And that's why I feel that some of us were given this role, because it is our mission to reach these people. And as I'm working with this organization that's building this incredible system for stroke survivors and caregivers, our new research shows that only one in 1,000 people, that only one out of every 1,000 people that has a stroke ever gets any help after they leave the hospital.
That's an outrageous statistic.
Yes. Yes.
1 out of 1,000.
And when you know that there are 6.5 million people who are in this country right now who are caregivers, and only there's such a small percentage of them that are in a stroke support group or are getting any help. And so there's such a need for what you are doing. What you are doing is amazing. You're reaching people that you don't even know you're reaching. And we are all grateful to you for what you do. But there needs to be more of us reaching out. And that's the next thing that I'm working on with the stroke support groups, is how to develop more outreach from them, because they don't even know how to find people to come.
You know, I'm really encouraged, because I remember years ago, not even that long ago, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I would always do searches for caregivers, caregiving on Facebook. And I remember the most that used to come up was maybe 12, 15, maybe 20, 25. In my search, because, you know, I like to share the show with a lot of other caregiver groups. But now when I do it, I can't get to the end of the list. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. So, and this happened, you know, recently. And just little groups, you know, for dementia, for, you know, post-traumatic syndrome, or just, you just name it. It's just all over the place. And I just have to stop, because I don't have time to send every single one of these groups a link to my show.
Of course not.
Like, I quit after 40 or 50, and then I say,
you know, and it's exponential too.
That's a good thing.
Yes. I'm glad that the support is growing, you know, because when John had his stroke, there were no books about stroke that I could find. Yeah. There were no books about caregiving, and it's exploding in the last 5 years. When I did the research for my book, and I read everything that I could find, there were still very few. But now, within the last few years, the books about stroke and caregiving are exploding too.
Yeah, I've been told on occasion by people in public relations, if you want to get on radio or TV mainstream, you have to write a book. And where I was coming from was, no, I don't know too many caregivers who really have time to read the books that are outside their specific, you know, area that they need expertise in. And I didn't need to do that. I needed to offer different tools and do it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've gotten noticed, but people will still say, well, you need to write a book. And it's no. Your book has a reason for being written, but I didn't feel any reason to write it. So it would have just been to get publicity, which would not have been the right reason.
Yeah,
then my
energy's
on something else.
What you did gave you more publicity than a book. I mean, you've got 160,000 or more people following you.
32 people from 160.
By the end of the day, it will it'll be there.
Boy,
is that website users that you're counting?
Well, that's Facebook-like. our Facebook people, yeah.
Cool. Very cool. That's excellent.
And she's actually started new smaller groups now.
Smaller
niched needs. And they're
more confidential.
Yeah.
Because they're private groups.
You have to be invited.
Get into, well, you have to sign up. So you're agreeing to a level of confidentiality as far as these things are not open to anybody who wants to get in to just read about this, that, or the other thing or prey upon them.
Yes.
I mean, because we can be victims as well.
Exactly.
There are caregivers looking for quick fixes. Yep. And I can't tell you how much time Corey, my assistant, spends on spam. And we were hacked by the Russians in December. So I'm serious.
You really and Trump, am. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But, yeah, you know, during the first year, we wasted a lot of money on cures, you know, for stroke and brain.
Sure.
Hypobaric oxygen.
Hyperbaric
oxygen and, you know, biofeedback and just all sorts of things. We had some Eastern person, you know, who had these concoctions and these pills, and these herbs, you know, that were going to, you know, regrow connections. And, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 later, we're no better. So then you just turn your mind off to anything because everybody's got someone who knows someone who's, you know, did this and this was done, and it's cancer the same way.
And some people have success with alternative medicine. So, I mean, I can't poo-poo it all over the place, but an article on it will do.
Yeah. And it just always happens to not be covered by insurance and happens to cost tens of thousands
Correct.
Of dollars, you know.
Correct.
So you have to mortgage your house. So
that's right.
We decided, you know what, we're okay. Well, listen, we have 2 minutes to go, so why don't we time is always the enemy. Why don't we tell each other what it is that how we can get a hold of each other? That's what I'm trying to say. Wake up here. Can't believe how fast this hour's gone. So how can you be reached if someone wants to speak with you or buy your book or whatever, Nancy?
Okay, I have multiple websites, but the easiest one is nancyweckworthauthor.com, and that one's just been converted from the publisher to me. I took it over a few weeks ago, so that it's being rebuilt. And on there,
is it working now?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just click on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or BalboaPress.com, and you can get the book. You can ask me to ship you the book. I have plenty of them at home and I'll sign it too. But I would actually rather have you go through Amazon and Barnes and Noble because the publisher counts them. They don't count credit sales towards me getting picked up by the major publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you find a publisher?
Well, my goal was to get published by Hay House. And So I went through their self-publishing division, and I've been working with the Hay House Writers Workshops.
And that's great.
Their training through the whole thing, through the whole process. And so their training, by the way, is amazing, and it's all free. But that's how I found them. I'm an avid reader of Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson and all of these people. And so I want to be with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a hybrid publisher?
Hay House? No, they're the largest publisher of self-help books in the world.
Oh, okay.
And the other great, big, huge one is New World Press. And then the man who wrote all the poetry from the Tao Te Ching for my book is published with New World Press.
Cool.
So,
Adrian, how can our listeners reach you?
Well, it's Adrian. Adrienne at thecaregiverspace.org. And thecaregiverspace.org is the website, and the Caregiver Space is the Facebook page. So there we are.
And Nancy, I forgot to have you spell it because your name isn't the easiest to spell. Your website.
My last name is Weckworth. That's WECKWERT as in Tom, H.
So Weckworth with two E's.
Correct.
And that's NancyWeckworthAuther.com.
Correct.
Great. And again, a reminder to all our shows become recorded pod and video casts on our websites, caregiver.com. Or if it's easy to remember, we have DaveTheCaregiver.com. That'll work also. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. $10 value, still getting rave reviews, one arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. You saw the commercial, my wife's amazing story. Nancy, Adrian, everyone listening, thank you again. So until next week at noon Pacific time, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.